running.
I don't drop it.
No, I just, you say you did Mr. Baxter right now?
Yes.
Okay, is that all you can take?
I've got a very little bit of chocolate milk left. I'll auction it off. In appreciation for you letting me speak.
Doug's going to fall out. He needs some.
We are about to take a break, I can tell you that.
My name is James H. Baxter IV. I reside at 24933 Governor Stokely Road in Georgetown. I appreciate the opportunity to take my mask off. I'm a little out of practice with masks. I did brush my teeth this morning, but I think my coffee gave me bad breath, and I'm about ready to be overwhelmed by my own bad breath. I need to start carrying chewing gum with me again. So, had not intended to speak. I had only intended to gather some notes, but I feel that agriculture and Sussex County farming practices needs to be represented here, so bear with me a minute while I pull a couple things up. Mr. Lawson, may I rob a slide of yours? I just want to see that PDF that you made with that fancy diagram on it. And then I also would like to rob the, if I could, pull up the maps, Sussex County maps.
You want that one?
Yep, there? That's the one I want.
You want it erased?
No, you can leave all that there. Okay. It's all right. We'll just scribble on top of it. But
you go ahead. I'll get you.
All right, so I'm gonna give you some statistics. I shared these slides. I just got home Friday night from the National No-Till Conference in Louisville, Kentucky. I was a guest speaker there to farmers from all over the world in sharing the no-till and the conservation farming practices that we do here in Sussex County, Delaware. Guys, that's a big deal. That's a huge deal for me. That's the largest crowd I've ever spoken in front of. It was a huge honor to be asked to do it. I've met a lot of friends from all over the country, and it all started by being asked last year, which was a virtual conference, but I had the opportunity to go in and speak with farmers in Iowa, the state of Iowa. Drove there this past summer, went into a farmer's barn, and he's adopted a lot more practices than we have, and it's allowed me the opportunity to understand what I can do on our farm to benefit the next generation and to benefit my soil and therefore benefit a lot of what we're talking about today. And so I don't want that to be missed. I don't want that to be glazed over top of, because we've seen an awful lot of pictures and graphics and some very good presentations from some others here. Let me give you a statistic, if I may. In Sussex County, in the fall of 21, all right, so in the 21-22 offseason, there are now 81,801 acres planted in cover crops in just Sussex County alone.
Right.
That's huge.
It's I think it's all-time high.
It is an all-time high. The Sussex Conservation District set a goal for themselves of 75,000 acres, and they surpassed it by more than 5,000 acres. That's impressive. And I want you all to know that. I don't know if you've been thanked, but Sussex County Council helped contribute to that. And so thank you, because it's making a difference. And I understand Mr. Basin, some of the statistics he brought about, it's not showing up. I think somebody's knocking on the door. I think there's some other statistics that can show otherwise, but I don't have them readily available, and I can't dispute Mr. Basin's statistics, because I think there is an awful lot of potential we still have to clean up our inland bays and to clean up the Chesapeake. But I'd also venture to say that agriculture is doing an excellent job of putting the best foot forward and adopting some of these practices moving forward. So to get a fourth generation farmer in front of a bunch of other farmers out in the Midwest. And to stand in front of them and talk about agriculture in Delaware, I kind of blow their mind a little bit. And let me share with you a slide that I shared with them about the 2017 census in agriculture. Delaware had 2,302 farms that produced $1.5 billion, with a B, in agricultural sales. That works out to an average of 637,000 per farm and ranks Delaware second in the nation behind California in per farm sales. Delaware ranks number one nationally in the value of agricultural sales per farmland acre at 2,791. It also ranks number one for lima bean production in the country.
That always blows my mind.
I bet you didn't know that, some of you.
I did know that.
New Charlie West.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agricultural sales in Delaware are high for a small state due to its high concentration of commercial boiler sales, and we understand that. We know what makes the clock tick here. Boiler production annually accounts for over 75% of Delaware's value of agricultural products. Now, with that becomes a wonderful byproduct that some at some points of time have referred to as a waste product. In the 70s, as early as the 70s, poultry manure was referred to as a waste product. It is a substantial byproduct and a soil amendment that responsible farming practices have adopted to use on their farms. Now, with that come some challenges that we're learning to overcome, but we'll not get into those details. Some other information that I printed off, that just in case I did get the opportunity to share this with you, and I might just leave this with you, but you just have to disregard my scribble notes on the back. The market value of products sold in this is Sussex County alone. This is from the Missipillion River South. Market value of products sold alone in the year of 2017 was $1,012,582,000 worth of products sold for Sussex County agriculture. In 2017, there was 275,000 acres in farmland. Not open space, but farmland. And I think that needs to be talked about a little bit here as we move forward. 96% of the farms in Sussex County are family farms. I can trace family history back on three sides to land grants. We're kind of a big deal, and I take an awful lot of pride in that. The fifth generation in my family lineage is in school right now, the oldest being in eighth grade, that has a pure love for agriculture and what we do. While I was going on my trip, the older two actually had the opportunity. They went out plowing snow and learned a little bit about what it's like to be responsible and make a little bit of money, and I'm really, really proud of them. So, done kind of rambling and talking real good things about agriculture, and I wanted to share. Let's take this graphic that I'm not sure which one of you two get credit for it, but man, I'm telling you, it's
Vince's work.
It's wonderful. Okay. Now, we were talking about buffers on both sides, and it was talked about, and I think something that could help with a question that was asked and it came up. Let's just say that I'm farming down here by these trees, okay? And water flow goes this way. It goes from right to left. And there's a development that went in here amongst these trees. And on the other side of the ditch there's these trees here. If those trees are kept, and I'm not saying those trees need to leave, but we have to be responsible in what we're going to do with these trees. And this is where it gets a little bit hairy, but there's something that's not really been talked about a whole lot. If these trees are left and unmodified, and we have an issue with a major storm, the responsibility on the conveyance of that water is to get it away from my business and from my family, and in theory, from my poultry operation. Because we don't want to talk about the unthinkable of what happens when a poultry operation floods.
Absolutely.
Right? This county for generations has relied on a ditch infrastructure that's in place. Whether it's right or wrong now, looking back, we can't change that. But we can only be responsible with what we've got. And to be able to support an industry that helps build this county and honestly helps fight a lot of what has been talked about today. If we make agriculture viable, we stop sprawl. If we make agriculture viable, no more land's going to get gobbled up to a development, and no more trees along the Indian River or the Indian River Bay are going to get cut down because we can't farm there anyway. We're not going to farm where it floods. So we need to keep agriculture viable. So we need to be responsible about the business that's operated upstream. Let's just say we have a hurricane come through or a snowstorm like we had Monday. How many trees fell down in Monday's snowstorm that you had to navigate back roads by winding in and out of the trees? So we've now got a conveyance problem in this ditch. But if we have no way of getting to maintaining that ditch, what do we do? We've now got a huge subdivision, 75 homes, 25 homes, 85 homes, whatever. How do I, the dirt jerk, stinky, dusty farmer from up the road, try to convince these people that I need to get here and clean this ditch out so I can get water away to be able to carry on the heritage? How do I get that done? And it's something we've not quite talked about today. It was talked about in our workshop. It was talked about quite a bit. And I think that's something that has been given up since we last talked about it. Agriculture was willing to give up a buffer. Agriculture was willing to give up a buffer along these conveyances in trade of having the opportunity to maintain these ditches, is what we'll call them. All right, I'm going to go up here. I won't minimize this. Hey, check that out. Todd, you're all right. You almost read my mind. You see this? What's this called? Gill's Branch. Gill's Branch is one of those naturally occurring waterways, perennial streams, that was channelized, we don't know when. But a fun little story for you. In the late 50s, my grandfather borrowed or rented a bulldozer from Melvin Joseph. He was clearing all this property here that was trees, because that's just what we did back then. This ditch, which in theory was hand dug, which was later cleaned out. You know, this ditch actually, this drains water from the prison, clear up the line here.
All the way up into Georgetown.
Yep. And, you know, it's not a tax ditch, it's a public ditch. So who gets to maintain it? The landowner on either side of it. So my grandfather was on this bulldozer and he had my Uncle Bill in his lap. Because the story is that my father, who was the older of the two brothers, didn't want to go out with his dad. He actually wanted to stay home and clean the house with his mom. But neither one of those, well, none of those three are alive to defend themselves, but it's still fun to talk about this story. But obviously, you could imagine how it affected my grandfather's thought process when his son didn't want to go ride on a bulldozer. He'd rather clean the house with his mom. But during that day, he kind of missed a pedal on that bulldozer and ran it down in the ditch. Obviously, there was no seat belts back then. Well, my grandfather and my Uncle Bill flew off the seat of that bulldozer onto the ditch bank on the other side. Thank goodness they lived to tell about it, but the funny story was, you know, there was an agreement between, you know, my grandfather, who I would assume would be younger than I am now, and his toddler son, look, when we go in the house, don't you tell your mom about this. Well, as soon as he walked in the house, hey, Mom, guess what we did? So that's the way that story goes. That's how adamant I am about understanding my family and what they've done to work this land to create something as wonderful as they've done. Now, fast forward 50 years, right? Now we have this wonderful subdivision. Actually, there's two of them here. Next to a country club, a golf course that's right here. So now, again, it's not really part of the subject to talk about the farmland here versus the development over here. But this is non-tidal wetlands, and we've spent an awful lot of time talking about tidal wetlands and how we're going to buffer them. And I'll look every single one of you straight in the eye and agree with Chris Basin, when he talks about buffering those tidal wetlands he sent you all pictures of. I think it's a wonderful thing. That new development going in on Love Creek, that's beautiful, absolutely wonderful. But it doesn't help me in this situation here, because it has nothing to do with how this operates. Let's go into this woods right here. All right, so that Gill's Branch is a channeled conveyance that goes into this ditch. And it still is a channeled conveyance all the way out and crosses Cedar Lane right here. But in this woods, again, you can go back and see where it was hand dug. There's a lowland and there's a flat, and then there's a ditch, and you can see where they piled up the spoils. Trees are grown up all around it. 75-year-old trees are grown up all around it. So let's say this is now turned into a development, and we have a hurricane come through and knock all these trees down. But I'm trying to run a business. I'm trying to carry on something that I think we all can agree is a wonderful thing for this county to the next generation. And on further up, we've got the drainage of Georgetown, right? An awful lot of people rely on the drainage of Georgetown. Further up, it all gets dammed up. So what do? Well, we've got to go in and clear it out. But without any kind of buffer, without any kind of right-of-way, without any kind of easement, no one's allowed to go in there. And that's something that has got to be addressed, and I think that definitely should be addressed moving forward. I'm all for keeping these trees. The days of this farmer going in and clear-cutting a piece of land, really, it's few and far between. There's got to be a very specific purpose for us to go through and clear cut a piece of land, because just about all the land that can be farmed is farmed in Sussex County.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Am I incorrect that with a new subdivision application, maybe Hans needs to answer this, I thought we had this discussion that there's measures taken to make sure that these ditches can be cleaned out with new applications. Is that not correct?
Under the proposed ordinance, yes.
Well, I thought that was also instituted under subdivision application.
Not today.
Okay.
Because it was referred to as selective cutting, and how that was removed from this new proposed ordinance, that only the noxious species were removed. And so that concerns me. If we're not allowed to remove and do selective cutting along that waterway, you know, what do we do in the future? So it's something that needs to be addressed, and I'd like for council to look into that a little bit deeper, because I do believe that was something that the ag community was willing to give up our buffers, our land, just like Mr. Ross was talking about, and I go along with everything he said, but something that we were willing to give up in order to have the maintenance option on these conveyances. Also, it was talked about density and buffers, and how we would give up buffers in lieu of density, and it was talked about. You asked that very specific question. It was talked about. Now, whether it was put on the record when we talked about it, I do not know, but it was talked about. And I do believe that is a very viable option. Now, let me be perfectly clear. None of us want to give up our density. But we also would like the opportunity for county council to be able to sell that density. for the specific use of reinvesting that money back towards preservation, specifically farmland preservation. I think that is a very viable option to look forward to in the future. And again, that has not a whole lot to do with this ordinance, but I think it's something that can be, should be talked about. Because the purchase of zoning is something that happens already in county council. The purchase of zoning is something that already goes on. And I do believe it's a very viable option of something to fund more farmland preservation.
I'm not sure how much interest we really had in it over the years. I mean, Todd could probably talk to that better, but we've had a couple, but three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish we had more.
You know? But you go back to some of these developments that have been shown in pictures today, mm-hmm. right? The people that want to live waterside, people that want to live on title along the tributaries, right? Along the inland bays, people that want to live there, they're coming from the city. They're coming from dense populated areas.
Right.
They're used to living like this.
They want to live like
They want to live like that. Right? They don't want to live on a half-acre lot. They don't want to live on a quarter-acre lot. They want someone else to maintain it for them. They want a place to be able to recreate.
Right.
And I respect that. So why can't we, if we can sit down and have a conversation, agriculture, sit down and have a conversation with Mr. Basin and his colleagues, is that not a viable option moving forward in those areas? It makes more sense.
Can I ask you a broad stroke question?
Sure.
If you were sitting in my seat, how would you feel about Section G?
I feel that Section G needs to be kept in, but Section G needs to be looked at because I think we're missing the maintenance aspect of the whole reason that Section G was put in place.
It has to do with the maintenance issue.
That's my personal opinion. Yes. That's Section F.
Section F is in, and nobody's debating Section F.
Okay, that's fine. As long as, I hate to get upside down and backwards because we say one thing and then we turn around and say something different in the next paragraph.
Well, G has to do with the incentives.
Correct.
So, generally speaking, that's something you support?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
But it has to be done responsibly, and I think there are some valid arguments that have been made today. But I think some of them are a little bit exaggerated.
I think you're taking it to the potential extreme case.
Right, right. If I do recall, the question was brought up, Rich, about a 25-foot buffer in the A zone. I'm pretty sure we never gave up that 25-foot buffer in the A zone. That was off limits, period. And again, I might be speaking out of turn, but that's what I remember agreeing to. Was keeping that A zone was never allowed to be messed with, except for maintenance. And I do believe there's got to be a way to keep some of these large trees in place. Some of these developments that have beautiful large trees, they're wonderful. You know, people want to live here. There's got to be a balance. And I thank you all for doing your job because I don't want to do it. One last thing, talking about agricultural practices and what we can do. I think the argument's been made about how well trees can help clean up the environment. I would venture to say that some of our agricultural practices do as good, if not a better job of those practices, and I've seen it on our own farm. You all have heard of carbon sequestration, right? That's coming. It's coming. What it does, let me explain it to you and the audience behind me. We are growing a crop. We are growing something all year long. We're growing an agronomic crop we make money off of, and we're growing a cover crop that helps our soils and helps us be able to capture some of these nutrients before they run off. An added benefit, besides the healthy soils and besides holding on and capturing these nutrients, they're photosynthesizing, right? And so what's it take? It takes sunlight, it takes nutrients, and it takes carbon dioxide. We pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. What's the plant do to it? It turns it into an enzyme. It turns it into an enzyme that it uses that it uses to pump down the stem and into the soil. In the soil, something happens in that enzyme that it communicates with microscopic organisms and say, hey, I got something that you can eat, but you got to give me some fertilizer. Right? And this symbiotic relationship happens, and by doing that, we're pumping carbon out of the atmosphere, breaking it down from CO2 to oxygen, which gets emitted back out into the atmosphere, and carbon, which goes down into the soil and reacts with nitrogen to help create a healthier soil to help the crop grow. And we start this cycle and we go on and on and on.
Right.
There's evidence under some of these practices that we're actually seeing bands of carbon going down along the roots from root exudates that we don't see in a forest. We're actually seeing carbon collect in the soil.
Right.
So there's something to what we're doing, and besides just funding, besides just keeping us viable. Right? There's something to working with nature and the way God intended things to be
right.
on our soils.
Agree.
I think I've said enough, and I think a lot of you are hungry. Is there any questions?
Any questions, Jay?
That was pretty impressive.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. That was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. How many more speakers do we have? We're about to take a break, I think, for a while. We're going to eat. I'm just telling you how it is. Are you going to be long or short?
Short.
Short?
Short.
How many
short?
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 How many
okay.
Short
okay. Yeah. Start. Come down first, somebody. Talk to us. Yeah. No, go ahead.
See you. Christina Darby, 4408 Woodland Church Road outside of Seaford. Members of County Council, President Vincent. Land is finite, and much of it is slipping away in our area and cannot be reclaimed. County Council has the opportunity and the responsibility to author a buffer ordinance with enough teeth to be powerful and effective and the merit to make a real difference. Not just for today, but for future generations. However, regardless of how well this ordinance is written, without meaningful oversight, strict enforcement, and stiff financial penalties for infractions, it will all be for naught. If critical steps are not taken now, there is the very real possibility that in the not-so-distant future, no land will be left to be protected. The benefits of our forested buffers are immeasurable, from mitigating flooding, filtering pollution, providing habitat for wildlife, and to the mental and physical health and well-being of humanity. The repercussions of deforestation are no longer some distant concern. We cannot change what has happened in the past, but we can look at the present circumstances to ensure protection for our future. This ordinance is important. For now, for us all. Thank you.
Thank you,
ma'am. Thank you.
Next speaker, come forward, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to comment. My name is Keith Steck. I'm the president of the Delaware Coalition for Open Government, and I'm a Milton resident. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today to provide comments, which will be short. I want to begin by saying I recognize the Wetlands and Setback Working Group put a lot of hard work and effort into what's resulted today. And I and a few others sat through many of the discussions and know firsthand the effort put forth and appreciate what it took to get to this point. I also appreciate the efforts of county officials and staff who have been working on this. And there are merits to what is in the document, no question. However, there's some work to be done to revise it before it's adopted. The following issues need to be addressed. On the technical side, I'm not going to comment. I'm going to defer to and not repeat comments made by other speakers, such as Rich Barrasso from Sarge, Chris Basin from Centers for Inland Bay and others. But I do want to reiterate the positions and recommendations for changes are sound and logical and should be followed, especially regarding increasing the buffer width to 100 feet of perennial non-tidal rivers and streams in Table 2, that's line 672. Removing the allowance of non-forest meadows from the resource buffer standard subsection 10D and require the maintenance of the existing forest and replanting of non-forested areas with trees and shrubs, line 718-724. Eliminating subsection G, the buffers, buffer options, that's line 781-878. To keep that option is to endorse false equivalencies. Allowing those options is for allowing destruction. Allowing for the destruction of acres of adjoining property will harm, not benefit the mature trees and other land that's saved. That destruction will destabilize soils and eliminate vegetation and its ability to absorb large quantities of water and act as windbreaks. Once cut and destroyed, those resources and their benefits will be lost for decades, if not permanently. And another point is adding a section on enforcement provisions and penalties for noncompliance. As Mr. Siemens pointed out, we need this. It needs to be enforced. My other observations, I want to make certain observations and raise concerns about a couple of other points. Some of the comments that have been made in the whereas clauses, well, some of these initial clauses are valid, such as the need for revising the county code and the comprehensive plan, calling for actions to protect wetlands, waterways, and the environment. But some of the latter whereas clauses saying that this ordinance will achieve some key comprehensive plan goals are a stretch. In fact, some of the language seems to contradict the goals of the ordinance and the comp plan, as some of the speakers have pointed out today. Moreover, this ordinance states the intention of Sussex County Council to achieve certain goals, such as balancing the protection of land equity with the protection of resources and their associated functions. But what is the basis to support some of the ordinance language, especially regarding the buffer resource options? Where did this language come from? The public, as far as I know, and I think the public agrees, no one's aware of what research or evidence that supports this has come from. Allowing these options has no benefit, but rather creates a situation of potentially choosing the lesser of two evils. Some comments about definitions. There are some issues with some of the definitions. The wetland definition needs to be clarified. Right now, the definitions of wetlands line 214 to 224 needs to clarify whether the definition of prior converted croplands in the National Food Security Act manual is contained in the latest edition. There is a fifth edition that was issued in November 2010, not 1985. Further, this document will no doubt undergo future revisions, and the ordinance should make reference to the most recent additions. Similarly, the Army Corps of Engineers Wetland Delineation Manual should make specific reference to the most current edition of the manual and the regional supplements to avoid confusion in the future on that. My last comment really has to do with the relationship and the size of subdivisions. The draft ordinance confusingly introduces the topics of subdivisions into the discussion of wetlands, buffers, and water resources. There's no real discussion about the linkage, and it creates additional confusion about changing the sizes of major or minor subdivisions and requires changes of subdivision size in different parts of the county codes. It's unclear what the relationship of wetlands and buffers is to the subdivisions in general and size in particular. What does the draft ordinance have to do with the subdivisions? What's the rationale? Those need to be included and explained. To require changes, to references to subdivisions in different sizes will trigger a ripple effect through other county code ordinances. Including the subdivision in the mix needlessly complicates this already complex draft. It's confusing and comes across as an attempt to make a major change to a significant topic without a serious debate by the county council or the public awareness. Further, what are those, why are the size of subdivisions being discussed in this draft ordinance? There should be a public explanation and discussion about why the size of minor and major subdivisions is necessary and what the implications are for the changes. That should be held in a separate hearing regarding the subdivision chapter 99. Why is there a need for changing the size in subdivisions, and why is it being made now? What are the implications for the changes? For example, what other ordinance make references to the size of subdivisions, and will they have to be changed? How would a change in the subdivision, if the size of subdivisions, affect a developer who now has a 5-lot subdivision plan in for consideration? Will it still be considered a major subdivision under the existing definition? Or will it be reclassified as a minor subdivision under the new definition? And what's the and all these points take time and consider and deserve the public's attention and input. So the discussion of subdivisions really should be taken out of this ordinance and considered separately. Sussex should remove that and move forward. Finally, the ordinance should be effective in 3 months after adoption. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a copy for the
someone else
council.
That,
is there anyone
you.
Else?
Yes.
Okay, come on.
And feel free to use ditto to some of the prior comments.
Yes, and I came prepared in case. Sorry, Keith, I have nothing against you, but I just have to take it very personally. I lost my family member to COVID, and I just heard that my grandniece was induced early because her mother has the COVID. So I have to take it very seriously. Mr. Riley, you had a question about the tree versus the meadows. And I wanted to tell you my firsthand kind of experience living in California. When there's a wildfire, the trees are burnt and the little saplings come up. But when the flood comes after that event, before the area is taken by the bigger trees, there's a landslide. And it's very well known. When the trees are burnt in the hillside, they know if there's a next flood coming, then we are doomed. So that's how much the trees work better than the meadows or the grasses in times of the flooding. So that's one thing. And I agree about the effective date. I'm not going in. And Zone A and Zone B, buffer averaging, Zone A not touchable, with an option, Zone A could be changed or reduced. So that for that reason, I oppose the option. And then next one is the wetland. This is the diagram that you had earlier about the ephemeral pond, and you know the definition of the wetlands. I'd like to see that one. And when I look at that, I come from the Asian background. There's something called feng shui, and in feng shui, yes, thank you. Here, this slope is the curve is not as much. But in feng shui, there is a way to measure the risks. If this curve was bigger, you know, on the left-hand side, bigger this way and this way, the area that goes like this, that gets more risk when there is a force coming down. If this was like this, more. And suppose the water is coming down from there, or heavy water is coming down, this area will be taken out. And that's the same thing happens when we drive on the curve. If we lose control in a high speed on a curve, the tendency is we go that way. The same thing with water. So the buffer on that
side has to be protected more, but I haven't heard that word so far. So I wanted to mention that, to consider if there's only 25 feet, 30 feet, or 50 feet buffer on that corner, it'll be taken out very quickly. I don't know if I'm clear about that.
I think I see your point, but
And another one is the discussion about the new house in Angola Neck. And somehow planning and zoning missed it. And there's no way to enforce or put a penalty or do anything about it. And that shows that we cannot totally rely on planning and zoning approval process. I think that's an example that we need to look into the process. And finally, I had prepared this, but some of them already Keith has mentioned and some others mentioned. I'll just leave it with you.
Yes.
The reason I prepared it was because it was not about offer ordinance itself, but it was about some details. Some people will say I'm nitpicking, but I'm not a detail-oriented person. I'm more into fundamental. If the details get in the way of the fundamentals, I look into it. And that's why I looked into these things. Finally, I do not advertise myself as a Christian, but I heard today something that goes against what I believe as a Christian. To me, claiming the God-given right is not the Christian value. To me, the Christian value is considering other people more than me first, even though I don't do that oftentimes. Also, seeing myself as part of the community, for the goodness of the community, sometimes I need to forget about what my right is. And I would normally would not say something like this in public, but because what I heard earlier today, I just could not refrain myself. And thank you very much.
Thank you. I think there was another lady here. Or was it, which one?
Come on down. Somebody walk down here, please.
I should be able to go fast. How do I pull up?
My name is Dave Breen, Lewis, Delaware. And I appreciate the opportunity to offer some comments, and they'll be very short. Most of the people covered a lot of good points here today. And I can reduce mine down to just a couple of questions and statements that are in place. Thank you. The biggest ones that I noticed is question-wise, I think it's incredibly important for the council to consider some kind of a conservation environmentalist specialist as being part of the enforcement of what's going to go on here. This is getting more and more complicated, as you're having to deal with. And the people who are going to be involved in making the decisions as to even the simplest things here, what is and what isn't a certain type of wetland, requires a very specific set of expertise. And I'm not so sure we currently have that available to the county and its expertise. One of the points that got interestingly quickly passed through here today was part of these buffer situations are also for flood mitigation. And if you reduce more and more space for when it comes to flood mitigation, we're headed into some real problems. An example is going to be in a couple of months here, we have the 60th anniversary of the 1962 Ash Wednesday nor'easter. Now, most of you probably weren't around for that or don't remember it. I was a child, so I don't remember it specifically. However, I do remember going through the area, and it was no different than going through Katrina, which I also had the opportunity to go through in part of the work that I do. It's devastating, and if you don't have the buffers in place, you just get ran over. Just that simple. And if you want to know how bad it is, the Delaware Archive has thousands and thousands of pictures. The state police have a bunch of videos that are available. And to give you the example, the water rolled in, and this is a long area. The water rolled in all the way from the Atlantic Ocean past Plantation Road in Lewis and Rehoboth, that border that's there. It rolled in that far. The other direction coming from Love Creek is it got halfway up to where the current schools are on the highway there. It's a rather interesting scenario to watch. Let's see, how do I get this to go? Okay, I'm not going to spend any time on definitions. And I'm like 102. One of the things that has changed is people have referenced a number of storm events and levels of water and stuff. When I was in school, a number of years ago, USGS standards at that time was they took measurements to identify and understand statistically what 10-year, 25-year, 50-year, and 100-year storms were. Today, that time period has been reduced in half.
Excuse me, sorry.
I'm sorry, what was said?
Good.
Keep going? Okay.
Sure.
So these times have been reduced in half by the USGS today. So they happen much more frequently, which we're all seeing. They also talk about when we have these major nor'easters, we salinate the land and the buffer areas tremendously. And it depends on how many days that water is built up in the Indian River estuary and on the buffer zones to take place. It takes days and days and days, and part of the damage that takes place, especially when you have a nor'easter, is it can take several years to get rid of the salt that got penetrated into land if it's far enough involved. So it's a big devastation to us. There was a couple of questions earlier on the natural buffers. There's the riparian zone. That's the shoreline of the water vegetation. Undulating land is helpful, and mature forest stands are helpful. The gentleman that was talking, he left, the gentleman that has the agricultural business, one of the things he pointed out is what's shown in the bottom half here. There's what's called the exchanger rate, and it involves what vegetation can do in terms of H2O absorbing it and CO2 absorbing it and picking it up and moving it. And if you look at the different breakouts that are there, a mature forest does 10 times what all of our lawns. We all live in these nice developments and we all have lots of lawns around us, but we don't. That's really just window dressing when it comes down to it. It doesn't do a very good job absorbing water. It's also why you have to have storm water management systems when you have those developments, because all the grass does is slow it down at best. It doesn't actually pick up all that water and get rid of it for us. The farms, basically all the farmland the gentleman was talking about earlier, they absorb about 2 times what grass does. But the good news is, he pointed out, there's a lot of research showing that number is actually closer to 4 times the absorption. But if you don't keep the mature forests in place, if you don't keep the buffers right along the waterways, those are the ones that are going to end up hurting us, because that's what absorbs the water in the long run. That's what absorbs the CO2, and we're just hurting ourselves. So with that said, let me just skip along here. So there's the 1962. This area right here, that's Milton Theater, for those that might have been around at that time. I do remember driving by that. And this is the U.S. Coast Guard Station. Just keep rolling. This is the inlet, right, the Indian River Inlet. Right here, this area right down in here, all the way back into, if you could keep going, that was the amount of energy that a nor'easter, and that was just that nor'easter had 3 days of 12-foot waves at high tide. That moved enough sand off the dunes to bury the streets 4 foot deep in sand. And that's because we don't have real buffers there. The only buffer that we have in that area is the sand itself. And the sand doesn't stand up to water movements anywhere near as well as the vegetation does. So it gets to be a problem. Jim Patterson put up, I thought, a pretty good comic that refers to taking this on. However, I don't know how many of you know that comic has actually been run by Jim 5 times in the last 8 years, because we haven't really accomplished as much as we had hoped to accomplish over that period of time in terms of taking on this. And here's what happens if we don't deal with it. We're going to continue to see, because one of the things is, that can't be included in this, but it's behind it, is one of the things that's definitely going to happen is we're going to continue to see sea level rise, and it was mentioned in one of the slide presentations. That sea level, we can expect sea level in the next 10 years to be 2 to 2.5 foot higher than it is currently, because of all the global warming stuff. You can have all the arguments around that you want, but it's happening, and we see it increasing. The Indian River estuary is a very shallow bowl, and if you just keep piling up more water, it's got to go somewhere, and this is what's going to happen. It's going to end up in a lot of people's backyard. This was the part of the last storm that took place about a month ago, maybe a little longer than that, that we had a nor'easter, and this is all the land that you see at Bayfront at Rehoboth, that they got more push than they'd have ever gotten before, and now they're obviously very worried about that. Where do they go next? That's the end of mine. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Now, was there
one last person?
I believe there was. This lady.
Please come down.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Dave. Hi, I'm Marlene Mervine, and I'm the executive director of the Nanticoke River Watersheds Conservancy. Thank you so much for hosting this gathering so everyone can appreciate the differing issues that are coming before you, also for all of you and also for all of us. And so in the interest of time, I just want to say one thing, and that is to quote a wonderful little quote that from Amanda Gorman, and I think that this sums up a condensation of everything that everyone has been speaking about today. And so it is: we have lost too much to lose. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Entertain a motion to go into recess until about, how much time do you need? 15 minutes?
That's good.
Is that good? Quarter after three.
Mr. President, did you want to check to see if there is
anyone listening? No, I'm going to tell them we're going to come back.
Reverse, okay.
Yeah. Operator, if you make sure you tell people, anybody online, we'll come back from recess at 3:15 and welcome their comments. Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson, to go in recess until 3:15. Question on the